With me today is my friend Alice. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Rod.
We're here to talk about two things. We're here to talk about the death cult club that you and I find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And we're here to talk about your work, which I know it's a broad category of like Lomi massage, but so much more, which I look forward to getting into in a bit. Hello, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I really welcome the opportunity.
Yay. So first, let's just start with why we're here and why we're wanting to talk about the Death Cult Club, and we should probably touch on like what exactly is the Death Cult Club. I mean, I think like let me just maybe I'll answer why we're here, and then maybe we can jointly share the story of how we come to find ourselves in that particular cult. We're having a lot of fun with it, and we were chatting about it, and I was just like, oh my god, I really want to share this with my listener folk. I reckon like a bunch of my audience would get some benefit from this. And you were like, being you were just like, yes, you're like, love doing things that are good for the world, so let's do it. So
yes, absolutely, wholeheartedly.
I guess that's the why. So yeah, like how do we come to be in a death cult club? Club.
Well, whenever I talk about the Death Cult Club, and I do regularly talk about it with all sorts of people, I quickly clarify it and say, it's incredibly life affirming. It's really, really lovely. It's very caring. And yeah, just to preface everything.
Mm. Yeah, it's probably, it's not as morbid as it sounds.
No.
So how did it start? Once upon a time, there were six friends that went down to the hot springs. Mm. And the six friends, was it six or five of us? I forget, six. Yeah, anyway, six. No, five. Mm. Anyway, we all enjoyed playing Q&A very much, which raises the question of, like, what's Q&A?
Love Q&A. Q&A, I find really wonderful structure and a wonderful way of communicating with people, getting to know people, getting to know people you don't know, getting to know people you do know very well, even better. Do you want to speak to the structure of Q&A? Would you like some outsider to speak to it?
Like both are good. You go.
Okay. So my impression of Q&A, which means question and answer, it's a very simple structure. It's basically you have a little group of people. You could even do it with two people. We've done this on a walk, hiking, just Q&A all the way. But a group of people is wonderful. The idea is to one person will start, and they'll ask a question. And every question is perfect and every answer is perfect. So the structure is one person will ask a question and then everyone around the group will answer those questions, and the person who asked the question first will answer the question last.
So just going back, if all questions are perfect and all answers are perfect, then you make it sound like it's pretty hard for me to fail.
Well, it's not about... Well, it's not about trying to catch someone catch someone out. But my thought was, and maybe your thought is, it's not just about something simple like, oh, what's your favorite football team? Or I don't know, what did you do on the weekend? I like the types of questions. I enjoy the types of questions that maybe get to things that are a bit more meaningful, possibly challenging, or just interesting and thought-provoking.
A lot of deep engagement often happens. So I love what you said. In asking about the perfect side of stuff, I just wanted to say, yes, it's very welcoming the way you describe it, and it's awesome, my experience of it. In like a group of, say, like five people, person one might ask a question, which is answered by persons two, three, four, five, and then by person one, who answers their own question, and then like where person two asks a question, and so on. And then if it was just you and I playing, it's just like the same thing between the two of us. You ask a question, I answer, you answer, then I ask a question, you answer, I answer, and so on.
Yes.
Listeners may want to go back to any of the podcast episodes that have got a title like blah 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 went to the pub. And that's generally me and a few guests having a beverage, playing Q&A around a certain theme or a certain topic. So yes, if you'd like a real live, genuine experience of listening in on someone's Q&A round. So excellent. So the five of us already knew that we liked Q&A a lot, and we went to the hot springs, and if I recall rightly, we sat in a pool for about 7 hours and played Q&A straight.
It didn't feel like 7 hours at
No.
all, and we didn't stay in one pool. We did meander to a few different pools,
Yeah, no one can
but
accuse us of being like mono, whatever it
no.
is, when you just do the same thing.
I mean, we maybe went to three
Yeah,
over those long periods.
we had diversity. We can do different things.
Oh, but it was a very engaging conversation.
It was. It had to come to an end because we had to eat. So we went home and we prepared food, and then we played Q&A with wine for another 5 hours, I think, or 4 hours.
Something like that.
And then it was time for sleeps, and then we went to a cafe for breakfast and wound up playing Q&A again.
This was something
And
different.
I just for something new environment, see how the other half lives. And then I was thinking to myself, right, well, that we must be done now. And someone said, hey, let's all go and sit in the back of the van with the tail open, looking out over the ocean, and play some Q&A.
And it was
So,
a wild and windy day. It was a very, you need to be rugged up kind of day. It was bleak and cold outside, but very cozy under the, cozy under the doona, just looking out the back. And we just got very, very deep.
we did. So there were lots of questions that, like, there were lots of lead-up kind of questions around, like, kind of, what's your unique offering to the world, or like, what's your take on what's wrong with the world? But the ultimate question, and at this stage we didn't realize that we were in a death cult club. That doesn't come until later. But the question was,
Oh, I think it was like the world is going to end in 28 days for everybody, the entire world. We're not going to say why. It's just like this is a complete thought experiment. The world is going to end. What would you do in those 28 days? What are you not doing right now? What would you do? What is the most important thing?
yes. And then I think there was another one at some stage also, which was like, what do you need to do before you die? Like, what are you going to regret if you don't bring it forth? So far so good. At this stage, we still didn't realize we're in a cult, because, you know, like, the best cults have got some kind of like layer of subterfuge. And so with those questions, they're really long questions. Like, we probably would have spent an hour going around the group of five just answering those questions, because they are chunky, yo. It wasn't until we found ourselves, if I recall rightly, it was a Japanese restaurant about 6 months later, and we're all just like, well, obviously we should be playing Q&A. And everyone went, well, yeah, obviously. And then someone opened with the question, it just happened to be the same group of people plus one. And someone opened with the question of, how are you going against your death cult club goals?
Correct.
And that's when we realized we were in a cult. And so we've sort of been ad hoc checking in since, and we jokingly refer to it as that. So that's the history. That's how we come to find ourselves in this particular cult. And it was like,
I will skip back 1 second. I think there was one step, because we had a conversation in the back of the van about 28 days. Things are going to end. What are you not doing? What would you regret before you not doing before you die? And then it was at that point that was like, this is really interesting. This is like, this is a funny little club thing. What are we? I think some. Then someone's like, oh, this is like a death cult. This is,
Yeah.
yeah, this is a death cult. Ooh, okay. But really, as I said, life affirming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're so right. And then that was funny, and then we didn't realize it was an ongoing thing until that 6 months later or whatever. But yeah, it's really life affirming, because it's well, I mean, let's get into it a little bit. Like, when we checked in again that second time around, some of us had made some progress, and some of us were frustrated by the fact that we hadn't made much progress towards our goals.
Some of us were also, I don't remember what my goal was. What's my goal now?
I was just going to say, like, do you remember any of your goals, and
Not my
how are you tracking against them?
well, my first one for my first burst one,
Yeah.
I just couldn't recall it, but my
Yeah.
second one at the restaurant was I bounced off someone else actually. I resonated with something someone else said, and I was like, ah, for me, one of my goals is having quality connection with people. Be it, yeah.
How's that going for you, champ?
Well, yeah, so quality connection, and I'm kind of translating that to community as well.
Nice.
And yeah, I've been just having it a bit more in the front of my mind to go, okay, what am I doing today? How much connection am I having today? I even ended up getting a housemate just because I was like, oh, I've been living alone over COVID, and then quite thinking, I really quite like it, living by myself. There's a lot of freedom, do whatever I want. But now I have a housemate, and oh, suddenly I'm connected to their community. And turns out we're also all in the same kind of community, so we've got a lot of connection anyway. But I now have someone. I come home, and there's someone here. I'm like, oh, hello. How was your day? And just the everyday conversation is nice, where I don't need to make any particular big effort. So anyway, having a housemate's lovely, and I'm just noticing other opportunities where I can be more connected to the community around me. Like there's volunteering that I was doing before COVID, like environmental volunteering that was really important to me, and that kind of went to the wayside. But just being able to be a bit more active and out there is very helpful, because I just have this feeling that, okay, when I die, and I've got to break it to you, we're actually all going to die.
No, what? Not me, though.
Not you, Rod. Not
That
you,
is a
Rod.
relief. Why am I in this
But
cult? It doesn't matter. I'll follow that. I'll check the fine print.
yeah, and I when I think about things, I think, ah, oh, it's my quality of connection with people around me. And it doesn't even have to be, it can even just be with the person I talk to in passing. Yeah.
You know what would be a really easy way to get a death cult club of your own going? Share this episode with a couple of people who might be fun to be in a club with. There should be a button right there in your app, and it'll take about 5 seconds. So, though I joke about it, like, it's really important. Like, you get, to the best of our knowledge, you get one shot at life, at least in this configuration. You know, who knows what's next? We'll find out or not. But something about that feels like some kind of a privilege or some kind of a one-off. There feels like there's some inherent value there, like at least for us, there's something about this topic which is exciting. And so as an answer to the question of like, what are you doing with that privilege or that opportunity or just that crazy circumstance of biology that leads us to be here or God's creation of you, if that's the thing?
Or to be, for us, we're to be aware. We are
Yeah.
aware of that we have consciousness. We are aware of our thoughts. We're aware of our experience. We're aware of our mortality.
Yeah. And without that, like I reckon there's a tie to depression, low-grade background depression. If you haven't got a bit of a connection between your purpose of being here and what you're actually doing, how you're using the experience and the way you're living your life, or if I speak for myself, because I don't know that this is true for anyone else, if I don't have that connection in place, I know I'm prone to a little bit of background depression and a sense of like uncertainty and what am I doing? So that's, as you say, it's very life affirming, it's very life positive. And the sort of the ongoing occasional check-ins are a nice little like using other people as anchor points or reference points or pressure makers, externalize the pressure maker.
And I think that's actually a really key thing, because we can have these wonderful conversations, in a particular, I want to say, altered location, not a kind of structure, an outside structure to your everyday world. We've gone to this massive Q&A question over questionnaire over in a different location. So it's different kind of structure in life or different setting. We can have important conversations and then come back to our everyday lives and go, ah, oh, I'm too busy. I'm just caught up in all the things. But the accountability, the touching base. Can we catch up and have a conversation in 3 months, 6 months' time about this? I think that's the kind of, there's something important there.
So I reckon in a moment, like I want to touch on my goals as best as I recall them. And
Yes.
in a moment, let's talk about like how we think other people can set up their own death cult club because it is infinitely spawnable. Mine were, as best I recall them, I think I definitely remember two. One of them was to appreciate the fact that I'm at a stage of work-life balance where I can more enjoyably and sustainably drop into a part-time existence and then really enjoy the pace and the slowness of my life around that. And I feel like I am a long way there, in that my days feel really nice and patterned and sustainable. And most importantly, I don't feel guilty about what is objectively quite a nice, relaxed lifestyle. Whereas I've been like more angsty about that for quite a while. So I generally do like admin desk-based computer work, generally, let's say in the mornings, and in the afternoons, I generally do a combination of going for a walk in nature or doing some other form of exercise or having a bath or having a nap. And then in the late afternoon or evenings, I generally do something social. Not always, sometimes I just enjoy my own company. And I am just so enjoying that little lifestyle. And I'm also getting away in my camper van for lots of little like easy one-nighters with myself and just like lighting a fire and having a beer in the bush. So I'm giving myself a big tick on that one and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm so glad that that's one of the things I wanted to achieve before death, like sort of relaxation and not always being in busy mode. And the other one for me is this is much harder and I've made much less progress. I have something to offer the world in relation to gender equality, gender politics, the next wave of the gender revolution. Even like saying those words is still very, like it feels very bold of me. But there's no question that if I don't do something in that realm and I die, I will have a sense of what dead me will have a sense of frustration. At the opportunity wasted. So, it is providing me with a nudge to get over that line. And I'm having a little bit of a fiddle at the moment with what that looks like, whether that's a book or whether it's a series of podcast episodes. I guess listeners in the future, in 2 years' time, if I've done that, then we'll know the answer to that. Or maybe it's like a YouTube channel, I don't know. But I want to contribute something in that world. I'm not making progress, but it's a big edge. And yeah, and the Death Cult Club has helped bring that into focus for me around its importance and the shape of it.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
So yeah, I noticed that like most of what we're talking about, you said that Q&A generally tends to be kind of more up the meaningful, deep end of the scale rather than small talk. I would also say that our Death Cult Club goals tend to be pretty meaningful and pretty life relevant. And they're probably more likely to be sort of challenging but rewarding rather than just easy and fluffy or easy and straightforward.
It was easy and straightforward, then
We wouldn't
we
need a
would
Death
already
Cult Club for.
no, you wouldn't need the impetus to do it. Hopefully it'd be just simple.
Could just have a fluffy club for that.
Oh, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that because everything, every answer is perfect.
All right, so how can people we think it's really easy to replicate this, which is part of why we wanted to talk about it. So how could people create their own death cult club?
Well, choosing to have conversations, well, with your friends or also with complete strangers. If, yeah.
What a way to pass the time on public transport. Just like
I
the four people you're sitting with on the train. It's like, hey gang, just pull your earbuds out for a second.
think, oh, you don't necessarily always want to lead with the death cult club as a phrase because it can be a bit confronting. However, there is, anyway, it can be a bit confronting, but in kind of all seriousness, I just think it's so wonderful to have meaningful conversations with people about what are their values, what is something that is important in their life, like how they are in the world, what their beliefs are and how they behave in the world. What are they bringing out into the world? I just think it's so important.
So I guess if you're going with like the formal puritanical version, then you need between, I'd say, two and six people. Much more than that is just too cumbersome. And if you can break people in around Q&A, like,
It'll be helpful. It's a
people are
useful structure.
often, it's a useful structure. People are often at first like, I don't get how that's going to be useful. It just sounds like a very, can I lovingly say, neurodiverse approach to conversation. So you don't have to do it quite that formally, but gee, it's a good structure for this. And then, yeah, I guess, guess you just chuck in a few questions, like just like let the group know you're going to be shaping the conversation in a certain way, and at some stage make sure the question is in there, like something like, as you say, like if you're going to die in 28 days, I mean that's such a hardcore, talk about an accelerant. If you're going to die in 28 days, what would you do? Or what's your unique offering that you need to do before you die? Question like that. And then the rest takes care of itself, and see if you can check back in 6 or 12 or 24 months.
And maybe part of it is not to, articulating, hey, this is what I want to do. This is what I would regret not doing before I die. And then maybe catch someone and say, well, what if you did that now? What if you work towards that goal right now? Or in the next, over the next period of time?
Oh, I love it. I want you in my death cult club.
And then say, hey, would you mind? Or would you, how about we catch up in such and such time and have a chat about it?
I love it. You mentioned also, by the way, that you've been thinking about it a little in relation to, you've done some work in palliative care, which reminds me, we're
Yes.
just about to shuffle over and start talking about you and your world and your work, which I'm
Ah,
really
wonderful.
excited about. But yeah, you mentioned like death cult club goals for people that are in a palliative stage of life, so people that are knowingly on their way to dying. That's going to be a very different looking picture, huh?
It can be, and it's not something I just want to lay out there or just casually, willy-nilly have a conversation about. That's something, if someone is genuinely in a very difficult situation, conversations have to be led, need to be led by everybody, and be led by, say my clients. I'm not going to suddenly push ideas onto people, but if someone wants to talk about what they're going through, what they're scared about, what their hopes are, and there can be an opportunity to really go, oh, what's actually really important to me? If someone, because I work at the moment, now I work quite a lot with people with cancer, and they're all, and people can have very like lots of different kind of outcomes. It's not always one path with a cancer diagnosis at all, but
You've got life and you've got death, and there's everything in
there's a
between.
lot in between. There is a lot in between, and but it can be a very big shock when someone receives such a diagnosis or starts on this type of journey. Horrible, horrible shock. And there can also be a point where hopefully people can start going, oh, what's really important here? What are all this, all this busyness and, constantly working all the time and going, I need to have this house or I need to do all these things that I don't know society says. There's a lot of expectations that are on people or on our own, just things we expectations we have on ourselves. But what is actually genuinely important? If one is had a big shock and one has to go through challenging treatment, there's not enough time and energy to necessarily do, oh, I need to work full time or maintain these appearance of functioning. But what could be really important is maybe being connected with family or friends or asking for help or taking time for oneself or taking time to be in nature. Like what's really important? What's restorative? So I can bring things into focus if one's had a big kind of shock.
It's nice hearing you talk about it. I'm definitely having the feels in relation to people in my life that have had a bad or probably fatal diagnosis. God, it's rich territory. So I'm thinking let's lean more into this thread. So I th and look at your world and your work a little bit more. You've got a couple of bits to that. There's what you do with the Melbourne Integrative Oncology Group, and then there's more of your personal business, which I think of as kind of like Lomi Lomi Plus, or something like that. But I'll let you. How, can you, yeah, introduce a little like those threads? I've got a bunch of questions around your Lomi Lomi practice. I'm open to hearing anything you'd like to say about your oncology work.
I might start with the Lomi Lomi because that's how I started in the bodywork path that I'm now on. And first of all, Lomi Lomi, what is it? It's it's otherwise known as spiritual Hawaiian Lomi Lomi. And it's just a beautiful bodywork style that is deeply caring and gentle. And it works very in such a lovely way with the body. So it's an oil-based massage. So
It's very, in my experience, this is a question, not a statement, because I don't know what I'm talking about here. In my experience on the receiving side of that operation, it's compared to other forms of massage, it's a lot of broad, slow, gentle, I almost want to say intimate, or connected. Connected is a better word, style of touch than other forms of massage and oily. And
Well, simply
in a
said, it's like characterized by like long flowing strokes over and under the body. It's a lot of using one's whole forearm, and it's very much like a dance.
Okay.
And yeah, very, very calming.
And what else is going on aside from, so that explains the physical forms of contact. What else is going on in the background there?
Yeah, well, they're so Hawaiian spiritual Lomi Lomi. It's Lomi Lomi is a traditional Hawaiian massage, and it's taught by Hawaiian elders. It's each it depends how you do it, or the details of it can be a little bit different depending on which family line you've been trained in. So
Oh, so in the same way, there's like regional dialects for language.
because it was a family thing. It's done within family groups. It's tricky because there was so much destruction of culture in Hawaii when it was colonized that a lot of the techniques and languages and culture were well eradicated. So it is an important lineage, and for someone to be like my teacher, Charlie Snow, has permission to teach it in Australia. So it's not just this mass-produced thing. It's something that a Hawaiian elder has to give, well, hopefully a Hawaiian elder will give permission for it to be taught. Or if you can learn it in Hawaii, fantastic. I haven't had that opportunity, but it's very sacred. When learning Lomi Lomi, one learns about Hawaiian culture, spirituality, language, history.
So it sounds like there's a pretty meaningful and concerted effort to be culturally appropriate as opposed to cultural appropriation. Beautiful. So when you are practicing that, who are your clients and
Yeah, I'm mainly word of mouth. A lot of people local to me. But I do work with people with trauma.
what kind of trauma?
Say sexual trauma,
Yep.
emotional challenges, physical trauma. So I want to create as safe a container as possible. So consent is really, really important. Autonomy for the person on the table. Things can stop at any time. Things can change with whatever the person needs. We'll work within someone's boundaries.
These things all sound very client-centered and very trauma-informed.
Those are helpful words, yes.
I know that you and I, because of our various bits of work, we have our understandings of trauma informed. Let's just take a quick little side story into that. What's trauma informed practice? I think of it as like help me out here. I think of it as the way you do your work or practice or group or community or whatever in a way which is aware of how people with trauma fit in or don't fit into what you're doing. And so broadly speaking, it's stuff like chaos is not so great. The element of surprise is not so great. Advertising that you're going to do one thing, then doing another thing is not so great. A sense that one is locked in to a program or a pattern or a way of doing things that can't be changed. That's all not very good. I'm speaking all on the negatives. You did a much better job a second ago of speaking to the positives.
Part of my thing when I first came to Lomi Lomi is I had this just such a drive or such a passion for being able to support people to live as fully and as expanded a life as possible. Because we can be in such contraction, like with depression, with anxiety, with trauma, with even just the busyness of life, we can be in this sense of contraction. Like we've got to hold on, we've got to draw in, hold on, and kind of like tunnel through. We can sit in anger, we can sit in grief and pain. This is this sense of contraction. The Hawaiian word for that would be pilakia, being in drama. But
For the listeners can't see that I'm smiling to myself about my own capacity to live in
oh, we can
drama.
we we oh we do it all the time, and we do it we this drama. Things happen to the world, things happen to us, but we have drama in our own heads, the way we interpret things, the way we interpret the world, the way we take things
Yes,
in. Oh, we can
we
talk about it.
do.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, we can. Yep.
But if one can pause a little bit, give a little bit of space, then go, okay, hang on, how am I automatically reacting? Can I choose to react differently?
So let me just string a few ideas together here and sort of circling back more specifically to what you do. On one hand, what you do looks like a physical therapy or a physical practice, and it is, and some of what you described is like bodywork style of issues. Most of what you're talking about is psychological. And there's something about what you do and the way you do it, which is trauma informed, which is beneficial to your client base.
True. That well, I hope it is. There's
What
an intention.
changes do you see? Like, how does that unfold, and what are the outcomes?
So I'll backtrack it a little bit. Like I've gone through a lot of my own stuff, my own kind of trauma, and my own psychological journey, a lot of talking therapy, and I was starting to do some talking therapy training, counseling training. And then I discovered body work. And I discovered Lomi Lomi. And for me, I was like, oh, hang on, this is a part that's been missing for me personally. Being able to receive touch is something can be quite profound, to be able to develop capacity to receive touch in a way that feels safe and calm, particularly if one has gone through traumatic experiences. And then for me, the next stage was to go, oh, actually, I can give touch in a way that's safe and calming and caring. How that kind of plays out for the person who might come see me is, I'll bring it back to kind of responsibility in a way. How I will do my very best to create a safe, calm space. It's kind of up to the person on the table as to how they receive, how they bring in the world, how they interpret the world, how, and I'll always work like very carefully. If someone flinches, or someone, if you have a micro movement that makes you go, oh, hang on, check in there, are you okay? Do we need to change anything or just alter something? But there's so much opportunity for us as when in receiving mode to choose how we receive. To go, okay, actually, this touch is safe. This touch is bounded. This person is gonna respect me if I, and if I don't even need to say stop or no, but if you just kind of, do a little twitch or go, try, knowing that the practitioner will respond to that and will change. So there's a kind of dance between two people in the massage space, and hopefully it's caring and in tune. Being in tune is really important.
I notice as I just listen to the way you describe that and imagine myself as client, just having that level of focus on me and that sense that the subtleness of the exchange is being paid attention to and cared for. Like I notice myself just relaxing and dropping in deeper, even in just the way I sit in the chair.
And that can be achieved through talking therapy. But it's
Yep.
often in talking therapy, it can be, there's a lot of effort, there's a lot of mental effort in
Yeah.
talking therapy. The physical, with physical touch, with working with the body and the somatic experiencing there, there's a different ways in.
Yes. It's complicated territory here. I've studied a stream of psychology which walks the line around allowing some forms of touch at some times under some circumstances for some clients, which is just like, say, if a client is having, say, like a shoulder pain, then you might ask if you can touch the client on the shoulder so as to draw their attention to that part of the body. And sort of it's an amplification technique, going back to Freudian or Jungian world. But even that level of touch with that level of containment and reservation and caution is pretty risque in most psychological circles, which, oh, like, God knows I understand why that level of caution is there. The tragedy around that is that sometimes I feel like you can achieve in one session that includes touch what might take 10 or 20 sessions of talk therapy. It's just, yeah, such a rich real world lived experience of that boundary setting and negotiation and body respect process.
That's a beautiful thing. So that's probably really why I love body work.
You love it.
I do, I love it, I love it.
It's part of why I wanted to chat with you about this. Like you love it. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What is it you love about it?
Everything we've said before, that this ability to connect with people on a meaningful level. So connection again, okay. Being able to, again, it's the responsibility of in my head, in my thinking, it's responsibility of the client to take what they need. And
Yeah.
they're on their, they're like the client is doing their own work on the table, hopefully their own psychological work. But if someone comes to me with just maybe they're feeling like crap, just even just simply in their body, they're like, oh, I feel so heavy. I feel everything hurts. Oh, everything is just, and maybe there's a cloud over them with just anxiety or stress or just, if someone can feel calmer, less pain, can feel more downregulated, can have maybe some insights and to walk easier and lighter
Yeah.
after the session, that's wonderful. If they, then, okay, here's the thing. Then that person can go and do their awesome death cult purpose in life. Ah,
Yeah,
there we go.
And I'm also gonna take a bit of a like stab here and guess that part of what you love about it also is that it's a tick in the box for you as to what you're contributing in the world,
Very much
assisting.
so.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, super. All right, so my feel is to maybe if you can just talk a little more to who your client base is, then where and how they can contact you.
Sure.
And then maybe let's just touch on your work with Melbourne Integrative Oncology Group.
Sure. Well, I am out in the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne.
Yes,
So,
Melbourne, which is a city in Australia,
right, correct.
as opposed to the
Yes.
Florida one.
Oh, yes, there's another one. Yes, so I'm out there. And in the show notes, there'll be some links to et cetera.
Can confirm.
Yes. So who do I see? I see anyone who wants to come see me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
But I do, again, I'm trauma informed. If anyone just wants to have just feel fucking fabulous in their body. Yay. Like, it doesn't have to be also heavy. This is
Yeah,
about,
right.
like, this is also, body work is about just helping you feel really lovely.
Because you can have too much of the whole
Ah,
intensity thing, can't
yeah, no, forget about it. Forget about it. Just, you can also drop all this story, story, story. Drop the story. Go and feel good in your body. Feel some joy in life. That being said, I do craniofacial work. So I work a lot with the fascia of the body. That's delightful. I'm so passionate about the fascia. It's just wonderful. I also do manual lymphatic drainage, and this is where we're kind of coming into the oncology side of things.
Okay. What's fascia work mean to a lay person?
Yes, so fascia is.
See, the listener may spot the way I found a way to inquire without making it sound like I don't know what I'm talking about here.
The layperson. That's how
If you
impossible
imagine
you
a
are.
hypothetical person who doesn't really understand that modality, how would you describe it for them as a relative beginner?
The fascia is like it's like it's well the fascia is this what they call it, the single largest sensory organ in the body. It is this like it's like a mesh that kind of mesh tissue that kind of encompasses everything. So you've got fascia running under your skin. It wraps around your nerves. It wraps around your veins. It wraps around your ligaments and tendons, around your organs. It just kind of
Okay,
goes everywhere.
so it's the body's gaffer tape.
Something like that. Yeah. And something, gaffer tape, so it can get sticky. Well, it can get kind of jammed up. And if your fascia is kind of jammed up around a nerve, then it means you're not going to move as easy.
Okay, so yeah, I was just going to say, what kind of presentation would I have if this intervention was called for? So, lack of easy movement?
Could be. Yep,
Yep,
restriction.
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 Okay,
Yeah.
yeah, gotcha.
But the key is
Aches and pains in the body.
everyone's got it.
Yeah.
So the key is the fascia likes to be worked with slowly and gently. So slow, calm, gentle pressure, a lot of
And thus,
static kind of holds
all of that broad, slow, oily, loamy, loamy contact.
can help as well. Can help as well. But the fascia is, yeah, slightly different, but we do lots of like static kind of holds in the head and very gentle stuff and maybe twisting you in a particular way to help things release. Basically, we just want to release restriction. So there's less stagnation, so there's less inflammation, so there's less pain, and things move easier. So it's wonderful. You can incorporate it everywhere. So that's fascia.
Know anyone that might like Alice's services? Share this episode with them. Super. And you're working in oncology.
Oncology. Yeah. So I started working at the Melbourne Integrative Oncology Group last year. They're in Bentleigh, which is in a suburb in Melbourne. And I just had the lucky opportunity to be able to take up a position there as a massage therapist. And one might go, cancer and massage? Isn't that, counterintuitive? Shouldn't you not be, they've got cancer. Should you not massage them? No, people with cancer can and should be massaged, should receive body work. We're not going to spread the cancer by massaging them.
What in this context does the word integrative mean? What are we integrating?
So at the clinic, they do like evidence-based treatment for cancer, but it's complementary care. So they have they've got a naturopath, they've got nutritionists there. They've obviously got the like I do oncology massage and lymphatic drainage massage for people. There's psychologists who specialize in assisting people with cancer. There's acupuncture, and the head of the clinic is this amazing woman, Tanya Wells, who has trained actually as a medical doctor and then went in to become a naturopath, and so is just highly, highly skilled, and just offers more than just the medical background.
Yeah, okay. And I'm guessing, well, probably obviously there's also the integration with the whole colossal Western medical system and all of those treatments and surgeries and interventions and radios and chemos and whatever.
So it helps people navigate the Western medicine with other things that might complement one's journey. So,
I'm laughing in a bit of an ironic way around, like as you talk about all those elements, you know, when you look at structural diagrams of businesses or corporations, and you've just got like all these departments and heads of departments and seconds in charge, and then the people under them, like cancer is like that. You've got so many elements to it, and so many threads, and so many bits of care that need to be attended to, from the psychological to the physical and everything else, and economic. How does coordination go? This is just like a random thing I'm curious about. Like, how do you coordinate all those threads and all those elements of care?
Say that would be really hard. I think it's just really hard. And some people maybe are more socially isolated, maybe not as connected to community, don't have family around, or have dependents, which means that they don't necessarily have the time to support themselves as well as possible. But I just had a conversation just recently with someone who she has her own cheer squad. She has people who, in her community and her family, her friends that she's cultivated, who are being her cheer squad and helping her out. And part of it is about being able to ask for help. And sometimes people may not want to share what they're going through and think, I've got to be strong, I've got to push through. I'm just this, I can do this. I can do this by myself or whatever. But if you can talk to people,
It's a teaching in vulnerability and letting yourself break down a bit, huh? Yeah. Who's Melbourne Integrative Oncology Group? Do we call them MIOG for short?
Myog.
Okay, great. Who's MIOG's client base? Who potentially is should be getting in touch and when?
If well, I guess if you've just recently been diagnosed with cancer, and you
All
need
of the cancers or
all of the
particular
cancers,
ones?
not all of the cancers, and you just need someone, not just an oncologist who you can't necessarily get in contact with all the time. If you just need someone to talk to or a team of people who can offer support at the beginning of the journey, but also throughout it, because a big part of what they're trying to do is to help reduce side effects of medical treatment. So supporting people through whatever treatment path they choose to take.
Yeah,
So,
because there's
yeah.
the old yes, is the treatment worse than the problem you were trying to solve
And that's a
question.
question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the other thing, what they also can support is the partners of or the family of the pe you know the support group for the person with cancer,
Yeah.
because that's people need support too. The supports need support, so
I've heard that.
it's not just about the person who
Yeah.
is going through that journey. There's a lot of people who are also journeying with them, so it's also for carers.
Amazing. Is it private or public or a bit of both?
It's private. Like you need to, as it was in private public, so
Like funding wise, is it private or like part of Medicare
No. Well,
or
some
both?
things could be
Some bits
claimable through
are, yeah.
medical. It depends on,
Depends
you
on,
know, the
yeah.
practitioner, depends on if you've got some kind of private health fund, and if it's it Let's just say it depends. But generally people, yeah, generally people are out of pocket.
What about just quickly circling back to your Lomi Lomi service? Are you like private or Medicare or
No,
referral through?
just private.
Private.
So yeah, just all private for me.
Cool. Okay. Anything else you wanted to say about Myog or anything else for that matter?
They're really wonderful group of people.
Why?
And they really care. They care, and not just they care, they are experienced and have quality knowledge base. So they know what they're talking about. And there's a lot out, there's a lot of, no, there's a lot of amazing people doing amazing stuff with cancer, really lots and lots. But it can be very confusing, and there can be different interest groups and people who want to help but don't necessarily have the knowledge to help.
God, it's such a steep learning curve. Like when you get a diagnosis like that, and how to bring up your support group, your supports, bring them up to speed and understand it all for yourself from a state of panic and anxiety. I feel like something like Myog would relieve so much of that, or some of that.
And it's the only one in Melbourne, the only integrative oncology group in Melbourne. So it's a really important thing. So, yeah. But
Well,
yes.
thank you so much for sharing all of those thoughts and all of those like exquisite little looks into those worlds you're moving in. And yeah, thanks for being a part of my death cult club.
Aha. Well, you see, that's the thing. Anyone can be in the Death Cult Club. So
Get out there
it's
and
not
start your
ours,
own
it's
gang.
not mine, it's not yours. It's we
Start.
are like, but we just want to talk about it and say, hey, start your own Death Cult Club. It's really, really, really wonderful. It can help bring things into focus and yeah, it's really important.
Thanks, Alice.
Thanks,
As you
Chris.
mentioned, I'll put your contact details in the show notes and see you with life.
See you later. Thanks, Chris.
And remember, friends, if you can think of anyone that might like any bit of this episode, please share this episode with them. There should be a button to do that right there from your app, and it takes about 5 seconds.